Tell me a bit about yourself and your background and where you grew up.
Well, I'm from London, the outskirts of London. But I guess I fell in love with the mountains when I was 6 years old. It was the first time my family had been to the mountains, and we came on a family holiday to Zermatt. So, kind of since then, the mountains always felt like home. And yeah, but that feeling has kind of stayed with me
Of
through my
course.
life, really.
Was the holiday to kind of do outdoor sports, or was it just because you like that area?
It was simply the mountains. And then yeah, we hiked as a family together. And yes, just the mountains felt like home. So that's kind of been a driving force in my life, I guess.
Absolutely. Do you get any special feelings when you're out in the mountains?
That's where I'm. That's where I'm at home,
Yeah,
I guess.
feels like home, any mountain range.
Pretty much. And obviously the places I've got to know really, really well over the years.
Of course, of course. When did you start running then?
Well, I can't ever remember not running because we all run when we're kids,
Of
you know, in
course.
some shape or form. And I think it was just something that I carried on doing. And I guess as I got older, sort of through school and university, running just became my way to be outside because I wasn't living in the mountains. And so it just became normal for me to run every day. It was kind of what I did. But I didn't think about racing or, you know, joining a club or anything like that. So it wasn't until much later that I actually kind of fell into the world of racing, and then eventually realized that maybe I should investigate a bit further.
Absolutely.
So
What
yeah,
attracted
so
you
it
to?
was really just running was just part of my life.
Absolutely. Do you still run every day? Without fail?
No, not without fail. I mean, there's always times, for some reason you might not be able to. But yeah, it's important for me to spend time outside each day.
Of course.
So, and running's generally my preferred activity, or just being on foot all day in the mountains. So yeah.
Is that why you were kind of attracted to longer distance, because you've got to spend more time outside?
I don't know, really. I always had endurance, which for me is really just it's more of a way of life than anything else. So I always just like the challenge of getting from A to B on my own 2 feet. So even as a child, I'd prefer to walk somewhere than to get the bus or, you know, things like that. So I guess it was just an extension of that. So the endurance just came naturally to me.
Did you grow up in London? I can imagine that walking everywhere was a lot more handy than public transport down there.
Well, on the outskirts of London, so it's transport into London was good, but connections out by public transport weren't very good. So,
What was your first ultra marathon?
I actually think it was running 40 miles on a track in Barry, which wasn't really planned. I went to visit friends when I was doing my PhD, this was.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
They were doing the race, and so I thought, you know, may as well do it.
As you do, yeah.
Because I was going to be there that weekend, so that's how it started, and that really started my career in world running, because I was selected from that race. I was selected to run represent England in the 100K UK championships.
How did that feel?
So that was where it started. Well, I hadn't ever run on a track, I don't think.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just an odd experience. Very small field, and of course then the laps were counted by hand.
Right.
Luckily not by me, otherwise I would have never kept track.
Absolutely.
But until that point, I'd run a couple of marathons, and I'd run the Snowdonia Marathon.
Okay.
And I'd run the Welsh 1000s, which was kind of a hilly race ending on the top of Snowdon.
Yeah.
But all of that was less than 26 miles, I guess. So probably that track race was the first ultra that I actually did.
Mm-hmm. How did it feel to be selected for the 100 kilometre?
Well, I hadn't even known that such races existed, so it was all a bit bizarre.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you get offered an opportunity and think, why not and try it? So yeah,
absolutely.
That's how it happened.
I'm assuming you prefer to run in the mountains than on the road, but is that true?
Yes, so the mountain running really started later that year.
Okay.
Which was the UTMB, which was also a bit by chance, because I'd simply read an article about the race.
Okay.
In a magazine, and I was due to finish my PhD that summer, so I thought if I race, it was a good excuse to kind of plan a climbing the race at the end of it. So at that point I knew very little about the UTMB.
Okay.
So that's kind of where it started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you get to know about it before you took it on? I mean, to kind of adapt your training towards it?
No, I didn't really train specifically for it at all.
Really?
No. I guess I'd had a couple of mountain trips earlier that summer, so
okay.
I was well used to, you know, being out in the mountains,
of course,
on foot all day, but
mm-hmm.
not actually running. And no, I didn't train for it specifically at all.
Wow.
It was more an experience kind of thing.
Okay. Do you feel that running has helped you develop as a person over the years?
Yes. I mean, it's been one of the ways that I explore.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's just been such a central part of my life. So
yeah.
It's just been always been with me, really.
Absolutely. How does it feel to have been dubbed the Queen of the Mountains? If you Google your name, it will come up telling people that you're the Queen of the Mountains.
I think there's probably been lots of people that have been called that. So, but it's nice, I guess. But yeah, there's many, many people that have moved in whatever way, whether it's mountaineering or climbing or running in the mountains. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
What is your motivation to kind of set new challenges and decide which races you're going to do?
Well, I don't really race much now.
No.
I had a long period of racing very intensely.
Okay.
You know, more than a decade. And I guess there's a time for everything in life. And now, I mean, it's hard work to organise the UTMR.
Of course.
And then when I do get time, what I'm racing doesn't hold the same curiosity for me now that it once did.
Okay.
And what does is exploring new routes in the Himalayas. So that's kind of where my passion is at the moment.
Yeah. How, with that said, how do you find success? Do you feel that you had a successful athletic career?
That's interesting. I don't really look at it necessarily in terms of success. Mm-hmm. I always simply wanted to do the best I could at that moment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was just loving what I was doing.
Yeah.
So it really came from that rather than thinking in any conventional sense of the word success.
I think that's better. Knowing that you can.
We have to be doing what we do because we love it. Otherwise, everything starts to go wrong.
Well, there is that. There is that. How important do you think that mindset is in terms of running and challenges?
The mental strength is definitely a very, very big factor, particularly in the longer distances.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have to be in good physical condition, but you can be in good physical condition, and if your mind's not in it, might find it really, really hard just to complete whatever it is that you're doing. So the mind does play a very big part in endurance events, I think.
Absolutely. And tell me something that nobody else would know about you. It can be anything.
There's a little wooden sailing boat that's called the Lizzie Hawker.
Really?
After me.
Yeah. Oh.
Not many people know that.
That's amazing. Where is it?
What's the island? Oh, near Seattle.
Okay.
I spent some time on an exchange in Seattle University when I was doing my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And my landlady there, this was just for 3 months. She later remarried, and they rebuilt a boat together.
And they
just named it after me.
That's amazing.
We should have some of the same spirits.
Oh, that's brilliant. All right, let's talk about the UTMB. What was it that initially attracted you to it? I know you said that you read about it in a magazine.
So I guess I was just intrigued by the idea of a race like that. And like I said, it was really just getting an excuse to plan a trip to the Alps and do some climbing and then do the race at the end of it. So that's kind of how it came about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I got to Chamonix, and just before the race, when I went to register, and suddenly felt very out of place because so many people in kind of, you know, the latest kit, and they looked like they knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I was there in kind of holy long johns, shoes I'd only bought just before I'd gone out there, and a borrowed rucksack. So
excellent.
I wasn't as prepared as most people looked. And, yeah.
Did those holy long johns do you well?
They did me well, yeah.
Well, that's all that matters, is it not?
I survived. Exactly.
You've had a lot of success at the UTMB over the years. What does the race mean to you?
I guess it just held a challenge for me.
Okay.
I loved the idea of a race that's really just making a long journey through the mountains.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's always nice to kind of circle a mountain.
Okay, yeah.
And then I guess there was always still challenge in the race for me. And so, yeah, it kept curiosity for me,
okay.
Which I guess is why I ended up doing it so many times.
How many times have you actually run it?
I raced it 6 times.
Mm-hmm. And you won it how many?
5.
That's incredible. How does it feel to be the most successful athlete in the history of the UTMB?
Well, it depends how you define successful. I mean, people have run it in a faster time now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but I just enjoyed it. It was a good period of fun.
Absolutely. Was it a goal to do it that many times, or was it just take it as it comes?
No, not at all. Yeah, it was really just take it as it came.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just worked out that it kind of just became part of my summer plan for those years.
Yeah. Is there much of a community or a team feel within the runners before the race happens?
Well, there's a great atmosphere. I mean, it's changed a lot now since I've raced it. It's become a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But there is always that kind of festival atmosphere.
Yeah. Does that make it more special, do you think?
It's just quite unique.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And kind of what UTMB is.
Yeah, yeah. Do you do anything to kind of prepare your mind for it?
Not specially, but as I was saying, the mental side is a big part of it.
Of course.
But mm-hmm. I didn't prepare specifically in any way.
Your mind is very happy being in the mountains as it is.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember how it felt to stand on the start line of your first ever UTMB? Were you feeling confident?
Yes. No, not at all. And I was just chatting to some of the people around me. Mm-hmm. And what I had in my head was the quote from Alice in Wonderland, just to start at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
keep going, and then when you get to the end, stop.
Nice and simple.
And so that was really kind of my mantra for the race. But mm-hmm. I didn't know, you know, I had nothing to gauge it by. So I had no idea if I could even expect the cutoff times.
Okay.
So, you know, I was just going to keep going until they told me to stop. But I didn't know if that would be by not making one of the cutoffs at one of the checkpoints or whether I'd actually make it all the way back to Chamonix.
Yeah. Yeah. What emotional journey do you experience when you go through races like that?
Well, kind of mirrors life, I guess. You know, there's ups and there's downs.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the important thing is just really staying in the moment and knowing that everything passes. So, you know, that the bad times will pass. And I guess having the confidence just to wait it out.
Yeah, that's a skill, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Did your first UTMB change you as a person? Did it change your outlook?
Well, it certainly opened my eyes to a world of mountain races, I guess, that I hadn't really even known was there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's certainly opened a door for me.
Of course.
And
you've done many and many since.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Do you still, I can't speak. Did it still feel kind of as special the more times you did it?
Yeah, I mean, with racing, it was funny for me. Sometimes I really enjoyed doing a race blind.
Okay.
Simply for the, you know, for the not knowing what was coming up and the kind of newness of it. And then there's also kind of a joy in really, really knowing a route. So, you know, with the UTMB route, it got to the point where I knew exactly where a certain rock was, or, you know, you kind of really know the route. So I actually enjoyed both. I think all the way through, my running was governed by just enjoying a variety of things.
That said, you know the route like the back of your hand, I'm sure. Which is your favourite part?
Well, it's actually a long time since I've done it now. I've been there. What would be my favourite part?
I'm sure there are many, to be absolutely fair. But, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was, again, the variety.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That I really liked, you know, the kind of high mountain passes,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a descent at the end from Fleger down. You can really run it fast if you've got the confidence to.
Do you have the confidence?
I certainly hurtled down it a few times.
Is that your favourite
descent? So yeah, I think it's just enjoying the whole route.
Absolutely.
Probably the entirety of it. You know, thinking that you've actually made a 100-mile journey.
Yeah.
Around a big mountain.
Beautiful place. I can imagine. Not that I've been.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you prefer climbing or descending? Which are you better at?
I enjoy both.
Really?
I don't know what I'd be better at necessarily. Like both.
Fair enough. Do you use hiking poles when you run?
I never did when I was doing UTMB.
Okay.
I do sometimes run with now on long runs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yes, while I was doing UTMB, I'd never actually tried running with poles.
Okay. Happy and confident without them.
Yeah.
Have you ever suffered any bad injuries or foot problems or anything like that during the races?
I had trouble the year that I came second.
Okay.
For some reason, my feet had got really wet during the night.
Okay.
And anyway, I think it had happened once earlier that summer, but during the race, the kind of hole of my heel kind of came away. So
wow.
We actually just kind of taped it down. It was like running on pins and needles, basically. So
okay,
mm-hmm. That was probably
the worst part. Wow.
Yeah. Then one year, I think I fell. I just remember running in a lot of pain at one point, not knowing if I'd be able to carry on.
Okay.
But anyway, I did so. It's amazing what you can run through.
Absolutely. Mind over matter at that point, I can imagine.
Certainly, yeah.
Have you ever had any hallucinations during the race?
No, I haven't.
Wow. That's a shame. That's fun.
Yeah, I feel I've missed out.
Yeah. Do you have any as a race director? I know that you can get a lot less sleep when you're doing that.
Yeah, definitely. luckily, I haven't hallucinated, wow. But it's definitely more of an endurance feat being on the organising side.
Of course, you need to put hallucinations on your to-do list. They're very Unusual. You said you liked both climbing and descending. What are your favourite climbs and descents of the course? Do you have any?
Descents, I always enjoyed running hard down from La Plagiere.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I guess because it is the last descent, you can let go. Because in a long race, you're running more conservatively than you would be in a short mountain race or something.
Of course.
Simply because the descents are over 1,000 meters, and once you finish the descent, you're either carrying on a new ascent or running, you know, so during the race, a bit more conservative.
Yeah.
A long race like that.
Of course. Favourite climbs?
I always enjoyed the climb out of Col de Monte.
Okay.
It's a bit wilder up there.
Right.
It's really what I like, so.
Right. Is it a little bit more technical in terms of terrain?
Higher up, yeah.
Yeah. Can you describe any low, like really low points? And when you have them, do you have any kind of way to get out of it mentally?
Yeah, it's really having that trust that it's going to pass.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds silly, but it's really keeping in the moment. So rather than thinking about reaching the end of the race, it's just working through, you know, whether it's to get to the next checkpoint or, you know, really breaking it down.
Yeah. What?
Just in the end, you know, taking it step by step.
Yeah, definitely. What has been the toughest weather that you've ever faced during the race?
One year we started in really bad weather, and so it was pretty cold once I reached one of the high passes.
Yeah. Did this impact?
Yes, it's okay.
Did that impact your race?
No. Really, I think, you know, you just well, part of the challenge of a race is just dealing with whatever comes. So, whatever the weather throws at you, whatever the mountain throws at you, whatever your own body and mind throw at you. So
yeah,
it's really just part of the whole challenge and knowing that you can cope under, you know, a wide range of conditions.
Yeah. Has the race taught you anything over the years? Have you adapted your kit and training and nutrition with practice?
Well, it's all really about getting to know yourself.
Okay.
And so with experience, you know what works for you, whether that's food-wise or anything else. And, of course, everybody's very different, so it is really important just to kind of listen to yourself and work out what it is that you need.
Yeah. Do you have any strategies, or did you, while you were doing it, to look after your feet and your legs? I know you've mentioned the time that your heel essentially came away.
Any strategies? No. I mean, probably then changing socks or something would have helped. But,
yeah.
No, I wasn't very strategic in my racing. I was more just running with the heart.
Nice. That's really nice. How does it feel to cross the finish line of the UTMB?
It's an incredible feeling. I mean, crossing it in any case, knowing that you've managed to make a 100-mile journey is pretty good.
Absolutely.
And when I crossed in first place, I guess it's just humbling.
Humbling.
Really.
That's lovely. Do you have any post race treats?
Nothing special springs to mind.
Really?
It's nice to have a shower.
There is that. Yeah.
Change.
Yeah.
Wash the mud off.
Hey, we'll stick with a shower. It sounds great. Wash the blisters off.
Although sometimes a shower after a long race is actually quite painful.
Chafe.
So, if you've got sores from the rucksack rubbing or things like that. So sometimes it can take a while to coax yourself into actually getting under the water.
Absolutely.
So, afterwards.
Once you're there for a few minutes, it's not as bad, is it?
Yeah.
And can you offer any advice to anyone who wants to take part in the UTMB for the first time?
I guess the thing that I'd say is just make sure you get used to long hours on your feet. So
okay.
Mm-hmm. Even if that's just if it's climbing or if it's just hiking in the mountains, but just being used to long hours will stand you in good stead, as well as actually running training kind of thing.
That's good.
So it's all about time on your feet, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big part of it.
Absolutely.
And then I'd just say bring the race simply to just to stay in the moment and mm-hmm. remember that everything does pass. So, give yourself a second chance if you're having a bad patch and kind of trust that you will get through it.
I like that.
The other thing is just to enjoy it, because that's why you're there.
Absolutely. Speaking of a long time on your feet, tell me about the thought process behind the Great Himalayan Trail.
It's kind of just my ideal journey.
Okay.
Being on foot through the highest mountains of the world for days on end.
Is that why you did it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What exactly... No, sorry, go on.
And I guess... because there was some new parts that I passed through that I knew, but it was mostly new ground for me that first time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, for me, I still get this huge sense of what when I reach a pass and you kind of a new landscape opens out in front of you. I still get excited by that. So, it was kind of everything really. Just what I love to do, and then you look at the maps so much beforehand, and then traveling through that landscape on foot, you actually kind of make it come alive. So,
it sounds amazing. What exactly did it entail? Mileage, days, that kind of thing?
Well, the whole thing is roughly 1,600-1,700 kilometres.
Okay.
But I had a satellite tracker, but to save battery, it wasn't sending, sending the location every half an hour or something, so that's
yeah.
not good enough to get a real gauge on the distance.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Generally, I'd start at daybreak and keep going for a couple of hours after dark, just depending on exactly where I was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were kind of long days. I remember one day when I was in Dolpo, I kind of sat on the side of the trail for 20 minutes, half an hour or something, and realized just how little I generally stopped during the day. It just became normal to keep moving. So
What were the biggest challenges that you faced? Was the altitude a different?
I'm lucky with altitude.
Okay.
And I can go to 5,000 meters, you know, within 24 hours of leaving Kathmandu, kind of thing. So the altitude wasn't a concern for me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was really, multiple factors. I mean, in parts, I didn't know the route that I was, you know, route finding.
Yeah. Okay.
And just the enormity of the challenge, really, and especially if you're on your own.
Yes.
You've got nobody, you know, you have to keep yourself going.
And yes.
Keep your motivation and kind of remember why it is that you're there.
How did you manage to do that? Keep yourself moving?
Well, basically, because I always wanted to see reach the next place, see what that was like.
Okay.
So,
exploration.
Yeah, I was just pretty happy and wanted to make the whole journey.
Absolutely.
So I was lucky.
What did you take from the journey once it was over?
I'm probably still working that out.
Really?
And I did go back the following year.
Okay.
More or less repeat it. So, I simply wanted to go for a long walk, and that was the best long walk that I could.
That is a very, very long walk.
It is, yeah. And now I'm still, what I wanted to do was kind of make the highest pendant route that's possible. So not crossing those three glaciated sets of passes. So not crossing those. But the detours that I made to avoid those, simply so somebody could repeat the route on their own and not need support over the glacier.
Okay.
But now, you know, Nepal is a living, changing country, and roads are encroaching in from the south. So
yeah.
I've kind of, since 2000, I did it in 2016 and 17.
Yeah.
But since then, I've been exploring this kind of alpine route, I guess, this middle route. So trying to improve on the route, and that could take me years of exploring. So that's kind of exciting.
Excellent. And you, I'm assuming you're going to go out and try again until you've reached the point of you being out there in the first place.
I'm kind of exploring different sections at the moment to see if I can string together my perfect route.
Okay.
And then yes, I guess if I manage to do that, I'd love to do it all in one go again.
Absolutely. With that said, then, how much work goes in behind the scenes to be able to create routes like that?
Well, it's the Great Himalaya Trail, it's a concept rather than, you know, it's not like, I don't know, the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail in the US, which are waymarked long-distance trails.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Himalaya Trail really came about as an idea of linking up all the regions or the mountain regions in Nepal.
Okay.
That only became possible once the Himal areas were opened up to trekking. So there were earlier kind of traverses before.
Mm-hmm.
But those always had, you know, there were restricted regions that you couldn't go into. So once those regions were opened up, then it became possible to, you know, think about an idea like this.
Okay. Yeah.
But there's Robin Boosted and Jamie McGuinness and others, but Robin in the end tracked what he kind of put forward as the Great Himalaya Trail.
Okay.
But there is no trail. You know, you're linking up trails that locals have used for centuries. So there is no one trail.
Yeah.
Myriad of options to take.
How long were you out there? For both attempts?
The first time 42 days, and okay. The second time 35 days.
Which did you prefer?
Both different, just different experiences.
Okay. Tell me about your nutrition while you were out there. What did you fuel on?
It's fairly basic.
Okay.
I was spending most evenings in a village, you know, just in a house or something.
Right.
So I'd just be eating with the local family, so whatever they would be eating, which is generally galbat.
Right.
And then during the day, it really depended on what food I could buy along the way. So
yeah,
nothing very advanced. It's probably noodles and biscuits mostly.
Absolutely.
I had a couple of places that I could send a package into.
All right.
But of course, you know, I was trying to keep my pack as light as possible. So wasn't carrying a bunch of food at any one time. And then probably about 5 or 6 of the nights, I had a wild bivy.
Right.
And
okay.
For some of those, I wasn't carrying a stove, and then in Bhopal, where I knew I'd have at least 48 hours between villages, I was carrying food, but pretty minimal. So I can remember rationing myself to a packet and a half of noodle soup, because I had to save the other packet for the next meal.
Okay.
So,
how much did your pack weigh, generally speaking, out of interest?
I'm actually not sure. I was carrying a sleeping bag
okay.
the whole way, duvet jacket, and then it depended on how much food I'd picked up for a certain section.
Of course.
You kind of cut it down to, you know, exactly what you need.
Yeah.
By the end of a trip like that.
Sure. I know you did it unsupported, but did you have any company for any of the days?
Well, this is Nepal, so I was sleeping in villages along the way,
mm-hmm.
and there's locals on the trail, so there's always people around, except for the part of Dolpo. Usually, it takes people 6 or 7 days to cross this section with horses to carry the supplies, because it's simply that far between these two villages.
Okay. Yeah.
So there, I didn't see anybody for 48 hours from when I left the village until I reached the next one. So for that stretch, I was totally alone.
How was that stretch compared to the other stretches then? Did it impact you at all?
It's certainly the feeling kind of hits you of just what it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember being on a trail maybe about 4,000 meters, knowing that there was one 5,000 meter pass ahead of me and several behind me, and so probably, you know, the nearest person at that point was probably at least 3-day walk.
Wow.
In either direction. So then you kind of get a sense of just how isolated you are.
Did you feel daunted by that at all?
Luckily not. No, I was pretty okay about it, which is important, because otherwise if you did let yourself get overwhelmed, it would suddenly be very, very hard.
Absolutely. Did you feel like you took a personal journey when you were out there? And if so, what did you learn about yourself?
Well, I think we're always learning. And of course, when you make a journey like that, it's kind of an intensifying.
Yeah, of course.
Simply because of the experiences that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the main thing was really just loving being there. So
mm-hmm.
being in those high mountains and being able to make a journey like that on my own two feet.
Yeah,
it's pretty special.
Absolutely. Was it particularly spiritual? Are you a spiritual person?
I'd say spiritual, not religious.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Tell me. Yeah, when you're in an environment like that, it's very clear. You know, just what a small part of the whole we are.
Yeah.
So it's humbling. Gives you perspective for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What was your favorite part about the journey? I know you've done it twice. Let's think about your first one. What was your favorite part?
It's a difficult question. I think it's the whole of the journey, you know, actually the entirety of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, thinking about the so many experiences that went into that I had in completing the whole thing. So it's a huge sense of privilege to be able to do something like that.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your race. What made you transition from being a runner to a race director?
Well, when I was training for UTMB, I used to like to go and do the route a couple of times in the summer.
Okay.
Into 12-hour days back to back. If I did that a couple of times, then I knew I was kind of coming into shape for the race.
Right. Okay.
But as the years went on, people got to know me, and those trails got busier and busier.
Yeah.
And so I came back to the Zermatt Valley and the area around Ponte Rosa, and then I realized that there was another long distance footpath, so the Tour Monte Rosa, which is the same kind of idea. It's a 100-mile route
mm-hmm.
circumnavigating Monte Rosa.
Yeah.
And so I tried that into much longer than 12-hour days. And just loved the route. It's wilder, it's harder,
okay.
More technical.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was training on the Tour Monte Rosa, I was thinking, if this was a race, this is actually the race that I'd want to come and do rather than UTMB.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I always had this kind of idea for years. And then when I spent time in Nepal with my friend Richard, we kind of talked about it for hours and eventually got to the point of thinking, why not actually try and actually make it a race rather than just talking about it. So that's really how it started.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you create it for runners like yourself?
Well, we have a stage race,
right.
And we have the 100-mile route as an ultra. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is tougher than UTMB, so it's not, as an ultra, it's not going to appeal to everybody.
No.
So the idea of having the stage race was really to open it up to a much wider group of runners.
Right.
You know, who maybe want to enjoy the whole of the route in the daylight. I kind of, the camaraderie that goes along with the stage race as well. So,
of course,
It really appeals to quite a wide section of the trail running community, I guess.
Yeah. Tell me about the stage aspect. I'm assuming the 100 mile is just over one day. How does the staged one work?
It's the same route over 4 days.
Right, 4 days.
So the... Mm-hmm. The sleeping villages on the night.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then the ultra is 170K. Mm-hmm. So the fastest runners have run it in kind of round about 33 hours.
And blimey. Okay.
The slowest will be sort of double that time.
Mm-hmm. Time put off for the 100?
60 hours.
Okay. Yeah. What?
And then we also have a 100K race as well. So
okay.
that starts in Italy and follows the last half of the route.
Mm-hmm. Is there a stage option for that one as well?
No, that's just 100K.
Okay. And what's the cutoff for that one?
28 hours.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What qualities do you need as a race director?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're a very small team. It's Richard and I, and you know, during the whole of the year, so we've kind of learned every aspect of the race, which is fascinating.
Of course,
During the I guess it's many of the qualities that you kind of need for being an endurance runner.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, for me, it's really about wanting to share that kind of experience with people, or create an opportunity that they can have an experience like that.
Yeah. What kind of challenges have you found over the years of creating the event?
Well, you never know what's going to come. So, like in a race, you have to be prepared to deal with what comes up.
Yeah.
But whether it means you actually have to cancel part of this, hit by a pump at the main ring.
Just
a head with a mountain run.
Absolutely.
So really being able to whatever.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, sorry. Signal went down. How did you manage to adapt for COVID? There's no more difficulties than 2020, I can imagine.
We had to cancel the main races because of the restrictions.
Of course, yeah.
And the situation meant that we could go ahead with the small mountain run.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With a small number of runners, less than 100 runners.
Right.
We had a kind of set people off at the start in pairs every 10 seconds, so there was no mass start.
Right.
We were lucky that the weather was the weather was beautiful that day.
Of course.
So registration was all outside and distanced.
Yeah.
The checkpoint was outside, and then after the race, it was kind of strange because we couldn't have any. Normally with UTMR we have a big gathering at the end when all the races are finished.
Right.
You know, that's one of the really nice parts, is bringing everybody together, whether the runners or the volunteers.
Yeah.
So unfortunately there was none of that, because the distancing rules were quite strict. So
yeah.
But people were just happy to be able to go ahead with the small race.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Yeah, just enjoy a good mountain run.
Absolutely. So what about this year? Have you got any plans?
Yeah, we're going ahead with the races.
Excellent.
Of course, what we can't foresee is exactly what travel restrictions are going to be in place.
No.
So no. We imagine it's mostly going to be runners from the EU.
Yeah, of course. At least you still get to run it. That's great news.
Well, at the moment, everything is positive and we're going ahead. But of course, we have to watch how the situation develops and what restrictions are in place.
Of course.
In Switzerland and Italy.
Of course.
Regarding events. So, yeah.
Touch wood. Keep an eye out.
Yes.
Can you offer any advice to someone who wants to sign up to, well, any one of your races?
Yeah, sign up. Simply. For the 170K and the 100K, then we do require some experience.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't ask for a set number of points or anything like that, simply because, you know, we take into account mountaineering experience and things, as well as simply what races people have run.
Of course.
But because the races are hard, we just want to know that people can look after themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The conditions are difficult.
Yeah.
And the stage race, that's also tough. So people do need to have, done a marathon distance.
Mm-hmm.
On trail or in the mountains, and not just a road run. But otherwise, yeah, the route is beautiful, and it's kind of a small, intimate, kind of a big race experience, but with an intimate kind of atmosphere. So
okay,
it's good fun.
Incredibly unique and special, I can imagine.
It's definitely unique, yes.
And harder than UTMB.
It is.
It just makes it even more unique, does it not? high caliber of athletes, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And finally then, what's next for you?
Good question. When I can get back to Nepal, the sections of this Great Himalaya Trail that mm-hmm. I really want to go and explore.
Okay.
So when I get time, I want to spend time out in the mountains and, just kind of wait and see where this year takes us to globally.
Yeah.
And see what happens moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your interview. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome.